From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. If you think the investigation into possible collusion with Russia by the Trump campaign has been a blow to the U.S. political system, consider Brazil. There, President Michel Temer and every single living ex-president have been caught up in a massive anti-corruption investigation. Others who are being investigated or have already been charged include cabinet ministers, the president of the Senate, the former speaker of the lower house, and dozens of other members of Congress. Brazil's political system has been in turmoil for some time. Last year, former President Dilma Rousseff was impeached by Congress. Now, earlier this month, another former president, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, who was once one of the most popular political figures in Latin America, was sentenced to 10 years in prison on corruption charges. Now, that's upended Lula's plan to run again for president in elections next year. On this edition of Global Journalist, a look at the huge corruption investigations that have thrown Brazilian politics into turmoil. What does it mean for democracy in Latin America's largest country? Now, in a few minutes, we'll be joined by a great group of journalists in Brazil, but first we're going to bring in Rodrigo Nunez. He's a native Brazilian and is now Associate Professor of Global Studies at St. Edward's University in Austin, Texas. Rodrigo, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Remind us just briefly about this corruption case against Brazil's President Michel Temer. What is he accused of doing? What's the status of the prosecution?
So there are basically two general accusations against him. On the one hand, he's being accused of trying to hinder the investigations that are basically, you know, reaching every single senior member of Brazil's political class. He was caught on tape trying to encourage or at least maintain the flow of funds from a particular meatpacking conglomerate into the hands of former politicians who are now in jail. And he's also being accused of, you know, himself receiving bribes from some of those businesses, as well as some of the construction companies that are at the center of the scandal.
Now, you said that President Temer had been caught on tape discussing payment of a bribe or bribes to another politician. What has President Temer's response to this been? Because this tape, I understand, has been publicly available for some time now.
It has been publicly available, and one of the original or initial responses by him was to claim that the tape was false, that it had been edited, it was taken out of context. And as far as I know, that remains his main sort of line of defense against that. But formal charges have been brought against him.
And so formal criminal charges have been brought against President Temer. What happens next? How long might it be before he goes to trial?
Well, and that's the thing, right? As far as, you know, there are different aspects to the story, but one of the potential outcomes of this is that he himself could be subject to impeachment proceedings, right? And he has spent the last couple of weeks investing a lot of political capital in trying to prevent that from happening. And what we observed just this past week is that a congressional subcommittee who had the authority to try to sort of push this process forward rejected the accusation against Temer, right? Thus giving him a second sort of lifeline. This was an interesting outcome and reflects in many ways his ability to maintain support in Congress and his effective use of presidential authority to basically buy support from congressmen.
But that doesn't mean that he's out of the woods yet, is that correct? He still faces potential legal jeopardy.
Sure. Yes.
Well, tell us, if you would, it was just last year that former President Dilma Rousseff was impeached in Brazil. Here we're looking a year later at a second impeachment of her president. Temer, of course, was her vice president and took over after Rousseff was impeached. What's different about what happened to her and what's happening now to President Temer?
Well, the accusations are very different, right? Dilma Rousseff was impeached based on an arcane sort of fiscal provision in the Constitution, right? Basically arguing that she used some funds in you know, somewhat illegal manner, not because she was engaged in actual corruption per se. Now, Temer is being accused of actual corruption, right? And also of obstruction of justice and trying to hinder the investigations. So those are two different, these are two different issues, right? In many ways, the accusations against him are much more serious than the accusations against her were. And one could argue that many presidents before Dilma had used the same sort of fiscal, informal fiscal maneuvers, right, to get by.
So sort of like fudging the books then.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Well, let me ask you about Brazil's political culture, because it is so dramatic to see so many people under scrutiny all at the same time. We're talking about every single former president, the current president, dozens of members of Congress, of the cabinet. Is it that all of a sudden Brazil's politicians became corrupt, or is it that this was sort of business as usual for many years and all of a sudden it's not considered business as usual anymore?
Right. So this is what's going on, right? It's a tradition, it's a history that is clashing with the new institutional reality of a very independent, autonomous, and very active judiciary and prosecutorial body, right? Brazilian politicians have lived within a formal structure of laws and norms, but within that structure, there is an informal way of doing things, right, that everybody participates in. And it's one that has been true, you know, historically, and which basically entails that you don't expect to, you know, suffer any sort of repercussions for, you know, engaging in behavior that formally is deemed, you know, criminal. Everybody does it. And if you don't do it, you don't get ahead, you don't get elected, so forth and so on.
So in other words, it's sort of the laws say one thing, but the traditional norms have been something different than what the laws said, at least around some issues like bribery.
Or campaign finance, for example, right? And this is how it's done. And Brazil used to refer to its politicians as, you know, well, he steals, but he gets things done, so it's okay, right? So it's been part of some of the general political culture and people's sort of views of how politics works in the country. But now we have the same culture, the same sort of informal set of rules and norms, again, like I said earlier, clashing with a new institutional reality of a very independent, autonomous, and very active prosecutorial body who wants to enforce the formal laws of the country.
Well, Rodrigo Nunez, our time does grow short. I did want to ask you, though, just about the independence of that prosecutorial body. In these types of political cases, we've seen that in the past, and even currently in the United States, the prosecutors, their independence is often attacked. How independent, really, is this prosecutorial body? What pressures are they facing?
Well, they're facing a lot of pressure, but they benefit from a number of constitutional guarantees, right, that protects their budget, protects their mechanisms of professional ascension, so forth and so on. So if really the political system is very limited in what it can do to this prosecutorial body, the Ministério Público, without triggering a constitutional crisis. And alongside that, you have the fact that Brazilian society is very much on the side of the public prosecutors right now, and any attempt to undermine their authority and independence right now would be very badly received on the streets, if you will.
Well, Rodrigo Nunez, thanks so much for joining us.
No, thank you.
You're listening to Global Journalist. On today's program, we're talking about the shockwaves in Brazil, as much of the country's political establishment has come under investigation for corruption by an ambitious group of prosecutors. We just heard from Rodrigo Nunez of St. Edward's University. We're going to open things up now to three correspondents on the ground in Brazil's commercial capital, Sao Paulo, who've covered these issues extensively. Joining us is Brad Brooks, the chief correspondent in Brazil for Reuters. We're also joined by Maurizio Savarizzi, a reporter in Brazil for the Associated Press, and by Liz Alves, a freelance correspondent who writes for the Rio Times and a number of other news outlets. Welcome to all of you. Let me start with you, Maurizio Savarizzi. Former President Lula was just sentenced to, I think, 9.5 years in prison. He was barred from running for a third consecutive term when he had left office in 2011, but was planning a comeback in next year's election. What happens next for him now that he has been convicted and sentenced?
Well, as in most things, Brazil, it's too soon to call. I mean, he's going to have an appeal that is going to be decided by sometime next year, maybe before the election. If he gets a second conviction from a group of magistrates, he would be allegedly stopped from running. But there's a lot of talk that he could get an injunction that would allow him to run anyways, and that would put even more pressure on the judges if he's the front runner of the election, not to convict him for other cases that are also going to be tried in the near future.
So wait, so he's facing others. He's already been sentenced in one case. And remind us, this involved an apartment or beachside condominium that was given to him?
That involves a beachfront apartment that was promised to him, according to the investigators. And although they don't have the documents to say that he owned the apartment, they say that the promise of the bribe would be enough for a conviction. And of course, that's hailed by many as an anti-corruption measure that was really needed in Brazil. Others are saying that Judge Sergio Moro, who convicted him, is a zealot who is very much against the Workers' Party and what it stands for. But what really matters at this stage is that for the next year's election, it's really too soon to call. It's if he gets a second conviction before the process begins by June, July next year, it could be hard for him to get the injunction soon enough. But still very, very early to call.
And Brad Brooks with Reuters, tell us just a little bit about your take on former President Lula's future. Maurizio mentioned that he is facing some other investigations beyond the beachside apartment conviction.
Right. Former President Lula, he's not just facing convictions. He's facing four more trials on what are arguably more serious corruption charges. So this conviction in the past week definitely was a serious blow to his hopes of running again. As Mauricio said, it must be upheld by an appeals court, which could take up to 8 months to a year to decide. If they do uphold the lower court ruling, then he would be barred by the Constitution. There is some wiggle room, as there always is in Brazil, but the rule of the land right now would say that he would be barred if that conviction is upheld.
Well, Liz Alves, let me turn this to you then. If I could back you up just a moment, this investigation in Brazil, I believe it's known as the Lava Jato or car wash investigation. Can you tell us just a little bit about how this got started and then sort of mushroomed into this enormous force?
Well, in 2014, I believe, investigators started to look into Petrobras directors.
Petrobras is the state oil company in Brazil.
Yes,
right?
It's the state oil company. Directors obtaining bribes from contractors and engineering firms for contracts. Now, in the oil industry in Brazil, everything goes, most of the oil prospects and distribution, it goes through Petrobras. So if you don't make a deal with Petrobras, you're usually not, you can't really work here, you know, the big oil, international oil companies. So investigators started digging into the directors, and it just mushroomed up, you know, Petrobras and directors gave names of legislators that would pass bills and legislation that would actually benefit these companies. So from Petrobras, the thing just exploded into Congress and into governors and into other industries. So it's a pretty big corruption scandal.
Well, Maurizio Savarizzi, former President Lula, whom we were just discussing, may have been the front runner for elections next year before his conviction. He's accused his political opponents of being behind the corruption accusations against him. What do Brazilians think about this? Do they see that from his perspective, or are they seeing something else?
I think Brazilians think that all politicians are somewhat involved with corruption, and if it comes to a point in the next year's election in which they have to decide, it's not going to be based on who is more corrupt or less corrupt. It's going to be based on jobs and income, which is the most important issue for a country that is with 14 million people unemployed and living through very dire straits at the moment. And I think that what's good for former President Lula at the moment is that President Michel Temer promised to deliver some economic improvement, which has slowly come, but not enough, maybe for a presidential election next year for a candidate on his side to win. Some people think of Lula not as a corruption figure of Brazil, but they think of him as the guy that was president during a time when Brazil was doing well. But of course, there's a very big part of the population too that wants new kinds of politics, that wants all this kind of presidential coalitions that we have had in the past of very corrupted schemes to bring in political parties for to support the president in Brasilia. They want this to change, and voting for Lula would be a way to reestablish that system that has clearly failed Brazil now. So it's really divided at the moment. There's half of the population very much against anything he stands for, and you can see that from the rejection numbers in polls like Datafolha, which is the most respected. And you can see there's a very, very big part of the population, at least 30%, will vote for Lula anyway.
Well, Brad Brooks, Brazil has had some big protests over the last several years. Many of our listeners may remember that before the Olympics and the World Cup, there were some big protests in Rio and elsewhere over, I think it started out as sort of protests over poor bus service, and then that sort of mushroomed into bigger protests. And then last year, of course, during Dilma Rousseff's impeachment, there were some big protests as well. Are we seeing that now with the current scandals involving President Temer?
No, there really aren't big protests anymore. And there are many arguments as to why that is. It could it ranges from people are just tired. People are simply just think that the investigation is actually doing its job. Some people simply just want, I think, just want the political chaos to go away. It's hard to say why people are not out in the streets. That said, there have been some union-led protests that did turn really, really pretty violent in Brasilia about a month ago against Temer. So it's not like there is not opposition out on the street, but certainly nothing like we've seen in the last couple of years.
And Liz Alves, I wanted to ask you about the involvement of various businesses in these scandals. You know, we earlier talked about this meatpacking company, JBS. I believe it's the world's largest meatpacking company, actually. And it was one of their executives who was on tape discussing a bribe with President Temer. Obviously, Petrobras, there's a large construction firm named Odebrecht, which has been at the center of this. How did prosecutors get the cooperation of people like this on the business side in taping these politicians and in building the cases against them?
Well, they offer them plea bargain agreements. The first people accused and charged got a good deal because, you know, they... all the directors, or many of the directors of Petrobras that were accused of taking bribes, are now actually home, you know, home arrest. They returned some of the money that they received, and they wear ankle monitors. So the executive, for example, for JBS, there are rumors and there is speculation that he actually went to Temer to obtain, you know, a recording because he knew he was going to be indicted. He was going to be charged, and he just wanted, you know, something. He wanted a big fish to give to prosecutors in exchange for his freedom, or at least for lessening the charges against him.
A reminder, this is Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. We're talking today about the massive corruption scandal in Brazil that has undermined trust in many of the country's most prominent politicians. We're joined by Brad Brooks of Reuters, Maurizio Savarizzi of the Associated Press, and Liz Alves, a freelance journalist who writes for the Rio Times. If you're interested in more Global Journalist, visit our website, globaljournalist.org. There you can find our program archives, as well as dozens of interviews with journalists from around the world living in exile because of their work. You can also connect with us on Facebook and Twitter, or subscribe to the videocast of this program on YouTube. Maurizio Savarizzi, I wanted to ask you about sort of a central figure in this, and we touched on this earlier with Rodrigo Nunez, and that is the independence of the judiciary and the prosecutors that are looking at this. And there's one figure in particular, a judge named Sergio Moro, who seems to have handled most of the big cases. What do we know about him? What's he's like? Why is he at the center of this?
Well, it's really hard to say why he's at the center of this, because Petrobras is in Rio. Most of the crimes were committed in Brasilia or São Paulo. So even people in the Supreme Court are always wondering, why do they always get these cases related to Petrobras sent to Curitiba, which is a city in southern Brazil, which is not really a colossal city. It's not a metropolis. But so Judge Sergio Moro is a keen specialist on money laundering. He has a lot of important thoughts on how the Mani Puliti operation was in Italy, the anti-corruption operation there that is very similar to Lava Jato in many, many ways. He has been very thorough in most of his decisions. He has also committed excesses, some of them that he recognized himself and others that were pointed out by other judges and members of the judiciary. Because of his role, many others felt inspired as well. So in Rio de Janeiro, there's another judge called Sergio Bretas, who arrested two former governors for a while. He has a massive investigation going on there as well, which is in a way related to Lava Jato. There's another judge in Brasilia called Valisney Oliveira, who is also inspired by Sergio Moro. And he's also charging against many politicians, including Lula himself. So he has been key to inspire a lot of these judges. But there's also another side to it, which is many of his critics say that he has a more he works more as a prosecutor than as a judge. And you say you can see that in some of his decisions. He is very aggressive and he's very straightforward in some of his answers. But he also takes a more prosecutorial stance in some cases. You can say that also Brazil's top prosecutor, Rodrigo Janot, who prosecutes politicians in Brasilia, also has a lot of credit for the successes of Lava Jato as well. But since arresting politicians is more complicated under Brazilian law because they have a special jurisdiction in Brazil's Supreme Court, it's easier for you to see former politicians or businessmen being jailed by Judge Sergio Moro than it is to be seeing those people going to jail because of Supreme Court decisions.
And Brad Brooks, so we have heard some criticism of this Judge Sergio Moro. I guess likely the politicians, their allies, have accused him of being a zealot, of committing some excesses. How do you see things? Why is he such a central figure in this?
He's a central figure because, as Mauricio mentioned, he is the expert on money laundering. And in fact, he's been in charge of previous money laundering cases. It also so happens that the money changer, a criminal who kicked off this investigation, the investigation into him, into who he was changing money for, who he was the bagman for, is based in Curitiba, where Judge Moro is based. So that's why that case landed with him.
So, in other words, this started out as sort of a small-scale investigation of someone in this relatively small city in southern Brazil accused of money laundering, and it just sort of expanded from there as prosecutors sort of followed the trail.
Yeah, I mean, I've been down to Curitiba many, many times. I've sat down with Judge Moro. I've sat down with the prosecutors on numerous occasions. And it's amazing when they talk about the beginning of this case and how it just basically fell in their lap. And it began as a small investigation into a gas station in Brasilia, of all places, and then just exploded. And we should also mention here that while we are talking about Lava Jato, car wash, the main investigation, there are now scores, if not hundreds, of investigations that have popped off of this. The largest meat packer that you mentioned, JBS, they aren't even involved in Lava Jato. Michel Temer, the president, has been charged not in Lava Jato, but in an entirely different case. So Brazil has basically become a nation under investigation. It's pretty amazing.
Well, Liz Alves, I wanted to ask you about the future for the Workers' Party in Brazil. Of course, this is the party that has won the last several presidential elections. Former President Lula was of the Workers' Party, as was Dilma Rousseff. And then after she was impeached, President Temer from a different party took over. But at one time, they were seen as sort of kind of a reforming, modernizing force in Brazilian politics that would sort of end business as usual and sort of the system of patronage and questionable campaign finance usage. Where has this investigation left that party?
Well, it has left the PT in the same bag as the other ones, I believe. I think that there was a lot of disillusionment among PT voters. I've done several stories of people that voted for Lula twice, voted for Rousseff twice, but would not vote for the PT party ever again. The PT started out, started out in the 1990s as you know, a workers' party based on union workers. The leaders of the PT were against the military dictatorship. They preached, you know, equality, or at least better equality here down here in Brazil. They wanted, you know, the poverty level people to go up, and actually Lula did that. Lula actually took a lot of people out of the poverty, below poverty level. For Lava Jato, there was another scandal called the Mensalão, which involved major PT leaders like José Dirceu, which was chief of staff for Lula, and later now is also involved in the Lava Jato. So I think over the years, people see the PT party as just another, you know, another party that has corrupt politicians within their structure, and they make deals. They make deals with parties and politicians that they criticized very strongly before. So I think that a lot of the PT charisma has left.
Well, let me turn this to Maurizio Savarizzi then, because it does sound like most of Brazil's political class has been wholly discredited by this investigation. And in some ways, it would seem like this could open the door to sort of a populist type figure in Brazil. What do you see happening in next year's elections? And our time does grow short.
Oh, I'm not going to make any big predictions, because the last one I made to Brad, I was completely wrong and he was right. I thought the impeachment would not come to an end, and he did. It was going to happen. But I can say that now there's judges and prosecutors who are also thinking of joining a political career. And for former Supreme Court Justice, that is very popular, called Joaquim Barbosa, even the top prosecutor, Rodrigo Janot, is being mentioned as one of them. So not necessarily the outsider is going to be a populist. It could be someone from the judicial system itself.
And last word to you, Brad Brooks.
I think a political outsider is going to win. I think it will be somebody with a populist bent. There is a man named Jair Bolsonaro, who is pretty pro-military, pro-dictatorship, one could almost say, and disgusts many Brazilians, but he's currently in second place in the polls. There's also the former environmentalist Marina Silva. She used to be with the PT. She used to be a Lula minister, but many people think that she's run twice and lost, and she simply doesn't have the chops. And there's also a man named Ciro Gomes from Brazil's Northeast, who is a very powerful politician. People like the way he talks. He's very aggressive, and he, despite being serving in the government in many positions, he can position himself as an anti-government candidate.
I'm sorry, Brad, we're just out of time. We're going to have to leave it there for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Reynolds Journalism Institute of the Missouri School of Journalism and KBIA, Mid-Missouri Public Radio. Many thanks to Liz Alves, Maurizio Savarizzi, Brad Brooks, and Rodrigo Nunes for joining us. Our lead producer this week is Lauren Wortman, with a studio assistance from Rachel Foster Gimbel and Idom Kasaye. Pat Akers is our audio engineer. Travis McMillan is director. For all of us at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for tuning in.